Good morning, Jared.
Good morning, Bob.
Well, first we begin with a production at the Company One Theater Company at the Calderwood Pavilion with the interesting title, Edith Can Shoot Things and Hit Them.
I love this title, don't you? I mean, it kind of says it all, actually. This is a new play by A. Ray Pamatmat, and we just recently talked about his other play,
so.
After all the horrible... Is it horrible or terrible? I should have had more coffee before I joined you this morning, after all the horrible things I do, right. Which is running concurrently at the Huntington Theater Company right now, also in the Calderwood space. But Edith Can Shoot Things and Hit Them is about three young kids. Edith is a 12-year-old, and she and her brother Kenny are living essentially with no parents, hardly any food, and no money. Their mother has passed away, and their father has kind of left them behind as he deals with his own things. But really what this does is gives us the perspective of this moment in childhood, which I think we can all relate to, especially it's set in the 1990s, so there are less influences than there are today. No cell phones, no Facebook. And these kids, they think they're adults because they're living mature lives as they see it. But of course, they're still children as we, the audience, see it. And Edith is just a complete maverick and totes around her little BB gun, her pellet gun, and is very successful at defending the family and defending their childhood. She's a person who lives, a little person who lives in a world of self-possession and conviction. But at the same time, you realize that because she's 12, her brother Kenny is a little bit older, they're beginning to shed their childhood. We have a little clip of the show where Edith rips into her brother Kenny's friend Benji, who suddenly is hanging around the house a little bit more because there's a little romance developing there. But she rips into him when she learns that Kenny has taken a very special interest in him.
Does? Good stuff?
Yeah. Ever since Mrs. Oshiek, Kenny says no one can know Dad's not here because he'll split us up. But here you are, and you know. It's like you cast an evil spell on him or tricked him.
This is, Bob, I have to tell you, this is a really great production by Company One, who I think really is one of the most reliably, consistently great theater companies in this town. You have these three young actors playing these kids, and I think you can completely identify to their struggles and tap into your own childhood. It's staged in a very small space at the Calderwood Pavilion. Sean LeCount, as the director, uses that stage very mesmerizingly. It's almost like being in their tree fort or something as they go from a diner to the backyard barn to inside their house, all within this very small structure. It's very captivating to watch.
But these are adult actors playing children.
Yeah, and I should say very talented.
It can be challenging.
They're young actors, mostly just out of college, but yeah, and they do it beautifully.
All right. Okay, so that's Edith Can Shoot Things and Hit Them, a memorable title for sure. Next, Arlene Chiquette, All at Once, and she is a sculptor. This is the first museum survey of her work.
Yes, and this is happening at the ICA right now. It has just opened. And Arlene Chiquette, this looks at the last 20 years of her career. She's somebody who taught at RISD, studied at RISD, lived in Boston for a very small period, and now works out of New York between two studios right in the city and at an upstate studio in Woodstock. But here we see how she has progressed over the last 20 years. She started by making these sculptures that resembled Buddhas. And actually, she was a little bit ashamed of her sculptures because this is at a time in the 1990s when art was more political. And here she's making things with a spiritual tone. But this is where she found her conviction as an artist. You move into the next gallery and see how she works with glass and these beautiful structures that are layered on top of one another. And they just sort of cascade down so elegantly. She's created a piece that's called Building, which I also found very, very mesmerizing. It's a cityscape all created through these vessels, but it's on a pedestal that's eye level. And it's reminiscent of what she would see walking across the Brooklyn Bridge as she was looking at Manhattan. And you move further along and you continue to see how she develops going into ceramics, which of course is a very difficult medium with which to sculpt because it's very fragile. You see her creating, which I think is very, very fascinating. She's creating breath and air, frozen breath and frozen air. But one of my favorite departures she took is she was invited to be an artist in residence at the Meissen factory in Germany a couple of years ago. And you might remember Meissen or know Meissen from museums.
This is
a totally crass way to describe it, but it's kind of like a high-class Hummel, right? Because it's very shiny and glimmering. The factory was founded in the 1700s, all these figures and whatnot. But she she was basically went into the factory and became the ultimate disruptor. She had access to all of their painters, the molds, and she crafted all these pieces that coalesce. So you have body parts on top of, you know, carts, and she's created all these things that are just fascinating to look at. So I think in addition to appreciating her process at the ICA, it's just fun. It's a great summer show.
All right. And speaking of fun and a great summer show, Jurassic World has been breaking all kinds of box office records, I guess. So is it worth it?
It has. It's been trounced by some of the critics, but not this one. I like the film. This picks up 22 years after Steven Spielberg's somewhat groundbreaking original Jurassic Park. And they've moved past. They acknowledge the trauma that happened with that incident in Jurassic Park. But now they've gotten all of the dinosaurs off the islands of Costa Rica under control, and it's become sort of this great Disneyland-esque theme park that people just drive to in droves, and they have a main boulevard, and you can ride the Triceratops and the Petting Park Zoo, or just take these spheres around different parks to see the dinosaurs until, of course, things go awry.
Which they must.
We're still very much in a capitalist society, so in order to keep the audiences coming, they have to genetically engineer a new dinosaur. She is named Indominus Rex. We learned very early on that she has eaten her siblings, so she's been raised in isolation. You can only imagine what that happens when she's been spending all of this time by herself. Of course, she breaks out and there's all mayhem. But it really harkens back to, I think, Steven Spielberg's original intent with, again, youthfulness and the spirit of defense, going back to, I think, Edith can shoot things and hit them. This piece really centers around these two kids who have been invited by their aunt to spend time in the park, and we have a little clip from the film here as they are running from the dinosaurs.
Mango!
We're gonna have to jump!
We can!
Are you ready? One, two, come on!
It's like one of our editorial meetings.
I don't know which boss you're talking about, Bob. But I think it's, you know, the interesting thing to judge a film, I think it's as interesting to listen to, don't you, when you hear that tromping of the dinosaurs. But this director was handpicked by Steven Spielberg, and he definitely carries that spirit.
All right, so Jurassic World, thumbs up from Jared. Some great, interesting stuff this week, Jared. Thanks so much for being with us, as usual.
Thank you, Bob.
Jared joins us every Thursday morning right here on Morning Edition. And for more of the items you just heard Jared discuss, you can go to our website, wgbhnews.org.